This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, 1 hour of old-time radio crime brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. Our first story this week is from Rogues Gallery. We'll hear their July 7th, 1946 episode titled Cabin on the Lake. After that, it's Unit 99 and Family Disturbance, their episode from September 7th, 1957.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Laugh a while, let a song be your style, use Fitch Shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, use Fitch Shampoo.
The F.W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo and Ideal Hair Tonic, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. This Saturday night, I'm going to spellbind you, Vaughn. Caught me while spending a week and the fee from my last case in zestful living at a summer hotel, which was so swanky that the help hardly spoke to the guests. For $25 a day, I had one of the 50 bungalows on the hotel grounds. For 30, I could have had one with a window. Well, anyway, there was a girl up there. Isn't there always? She was named Janice Cole, a sort of a social secretary to the hotel. She was about 28. Her eyes were so big and blue, they made you think of mountain lakes. And her hair was as black as a jealous rage. She had a figure that made you think you'd seen her before in a swimsuit. Oh, she was real quality. Much to my high blood pressure, she was engaged to a society playboy with a dollar for every suntan in Florida, and his name was Clint Hayes. There was dancing going on in the ballroom of the hotel, and Janice was dancing with Clint, but she was watching me. I thought I saw fear in her eyes. They finished their dance right in front of me. Well, I certainly enjoyed that exhibition, Clint.
Glad you liked it, Rogue. Dancing with Janice is a wonderful way to spend an evening.
I believe that. Well, how about the next one, Janice?
Oh, I can't, Richard. I don't feel very well.
Oh, really, darling?
Yes, I think I'll go to my cabin, Clint. I have a terrible headache.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, dear. Is there anything I can get for you?
I've got some aspirin.
Oh, no. I think I'll just lie down for a while. I'll be back as soon as I feel a little more like enjoying the party.
After Janice Cole left, I ducked Clint and mingled with the crowd, fencing in and out of polite conversation and keeping up a gay front to cover the worry which was stampeding around in my mind. I couldn't forget the lost look in the eyes of Janice Cole, a look that was so full of fear and hopelessness that it haunted me. I decided, after sweating out 30 minutes of wondering why she was so frightened, to drop by her bungalow and have a fatherly chat with her. I casually worked my way along a chain of conversations to the open door and faded unobtrusively out into the night. There was a light in Janice's bungalow. I walked rapidly toward it. The door was ajar. When I knocked on it, it swung open. And I saw Janice lying there, a red pool expanding on the Navajo rug under her head. I took a few steps into the room.
Oh!
I was on the inside of a giant bell, clinging to the clapper with the strength of desperation. It swung through eternity like a giant pendulum. And at the end of every arc, the universe was shattered by the sound of the tolling. I couldn't stand the noise. I let go on the tremendous upsweep and was catapulted through space at a terrifying, breathless speed. The ringing of the bell grew fainter and fainter. And then, there was quiet. I drifted peacefully for a while and landed as gently as a snowflake on a sparrow's wing. And I rested on cloud 8 in the blackness of complete oblivion.
Hey, Chiefy! You better come out of it!
Oh, go away, Ugor.
No, I'm sorry, Rogie. You've got to get back on the ball, or you're going to find yourself
absent-minded. Come on now.
Oh,
come on.
Hugo, go away. I'm not well. I've been hurt.
There are things going on that you ought to know about, Rogie.
I don't care. I'm on my vacation.
You're in trouble, Rogie. Bad trouble. Remember that dead girl?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Well, what are you going to do about it? Let him get away with it?
Oh, I don't want to talk about it. Let me alone.
Well, I guess you've been hit on the head once too often, Rogie. Lost your nerve, huh?
What do you mean, midget?
No fight left in you. It's too bad.
I've got plenty of fight left in me. What's going on down there?
Well, you better go down and see, Rogie. Come on, I'll help you over the side.
Okay, come on, give me a push, Hugo. Oh, you're a fine alter ego, and I'm proud of you.
I try to take care of you, Chiefy. Over you go, Rogie. Over you go.
I dreaded opening my eyes because I remembered that dead girl lying there. But I opened them at last. And what I didn't see made me think I'd lost my mind. Where the body had lain, staining the Navajo rug, there was a Navajo rug, but no stain and no body. I wobbled to my feet. My knees were made of soup. I grabbed the bed for support and threw my massive intellect into high. There were strange things happening here, and they were happening to me. I decided to stay mum and get back to the dance to see what I could discover from the behavior of the inmates. I took out my pocket comb, dressed my hair around the bump on my head so I wouldn't look like I had two, wiped the bed and the doorknob clean of my fingerprints, and looking much better than I felt, rejoined the party. Clint was talking with Nancy Bowman, another luscious lady on the hotel social staff.
Hello, Rogue. We've been looking for you.
Oh, hi, Clint. Hello, Nancy.
Hello, Richard. Where have you been?
We're getting a little fresh air. How about this dance, Nancy?
Can't. I promised Clint.
Oh, go ahead. I'll be noble. Janice should be coming back soon anyhow.
Well, all right then. You're on, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, for you, my dear, both of them. See you later, Clint.
Bye.
You know, Nancy, that Clint's a lucky man getting a girl like Janice. She's what the boys in the back room call a dish.
Ah, I suppose Janice isn't lucky getting a man with a million.
Not my type. Now, I don't have the million, but...
Well, then let's just dance.
Oh.
Now that Janice has her millionaire, I'm out to get mine.
Your girl's old friend?
No, I've worked up here with her summers for a couple of years. She's a grand girl. Everybody loves her.
She's engaged to this creep with the millions?
Yes, they're going to be married in 2 weeks. Don't you ever read the newspapers?
Oh, guess it wasn't on the sport page.
Probably not. Though the way Janice stalked him, it could have been.
Kitty, 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 kitty.
May I cut in?
Hi, Frank. That's up to you, Richard.
Well, I never give up beautiful ladies to strangers.
You don't know Frank, the lady's home companion?
That can be taken care of. Introduce me, Nancy.
Mr. Rogue, this is Frank Pitts, friend of Janice's.
Oh, glad to know you, Mr. Pitts.
Thank you, Mr. Rogue. Where is Janice, anyway? She promised me some rumbas tonight.
Well, she wasn't feeling very well. She went to her bungalow to get a little rest. You insist on cutting in?
Unless you have some very fine arguments against it.
Well, I guess I haven't. Nancy, I hope I'll see you later.
You will. This is a temporary thing, Richard.
Well, what happened to your dance, Rogue?
A man cut in on me.
Oh, that's Frank Pitts. He doesn't belong here, Rogue. He's all shoulders and no money.
I understand that he and Janice are old friends.
That's right. Frank Pitts has been in love with Janice for years. They're from the same town back east.
No kidding. Oh, well, he was in love with her too, huh?
Desperately. But I don't feel sorry for him. He's not good enough for a girl like Janice.
No, no, Clint, a girl's entitled to old friends. You seem to be the jealous type. No, I used to be a little like that about Betty Callahan.
I'm not jealous, Rogue. I just hate to see a girl like Janice making a fool of herself over a no-good like that Pitts. Ever since he arrived today, she's been moody and dejected.
Oh, that's
and...
the way it is. Oh, that's the way it is, huh? You and Janice had a spat over the old flame.
We
and...
did not. You're being most impolite, Mr. Rogue. Janice and I happen to be
Mr.
in love.
Rogue.
Yes?
There's a man outside who would like to talk with you for a minute.
Why?
It's most important, Mr. Rogue. Please come with me.
Okay, excuse me, Clint. Well, you look a little upset. What's the matter?
Oh, it's horrible. Horrible.
May I ask what you're talking about?
No, I can't tell you, Mr. Rogue. But in all my years in hotel management, this is the most terrible thing that's ever happened to me. Here he is, Mr. Mills. Mr. Mills is our district attorney, Mr. Rogue.
Oh, well, I'm glad to know you, Mr. Mills. What can I do for you?
You're Richard Rogue, the private investigator from Los Angeles?
That's right. Why?
Well, I'd like to talk with you, Ms. Rogue, about a murder.
Oh, yes. Why, sure, Mr. Mills. Always glad to lend my talents to law enforcement.
That's nice of you, Mr. Rogue, because you can help a lot on this case. Why did you murder Janice Cole?
We'll return to our story in just a moment. First, dandruff on the shoulders and coat collar of a well-groomed person is as out of place as snow in July. That's why so many persons who want to have a smart, well-groomed appearance use Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo regularly. For Fitch Shampoo has a special solvent action that dissolves unsightly dandruff. When you apply Fitch's to your hair and scalp before adding water, this solvent action goes to work. So it's important to remember not to wet your hair before the shampoo is applied. After massaging your scalp briskly for a few minutes, then apply water. An abundance of cleansing lather will form to carry away the dissolved dandruff. Then the lather rinses out easily and completely, leaves the hair immaculately clean without a trace of dandruff. Yes, Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo is a real aid to good grooming. Use it regularly. You can buy an economical bottle of Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug or toilet goods counter, or have a professional application at your beauty or barber shop. Now, back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
My guilty conscience was calling me names and giving me bad advice as I stole out of the ballroom with the DA. He had accused me of murder. I knew who was murdered. I'd seen her in her bungalow, dead. Janice Cole. The DA was as quiet as a grave during that walk and not a bit more cheerful. I made a couple of abortive attempts at conversation, but I might as well have been talking to a totem pole. I couldn't understand why he was heading for my bungalow until he opened the door, and I saw Janice lying there on that blood-stained Navajo rug, just as I had seen her a half hour before in her own bungalow. I tried to say something, but the words couldn't get by the lump in my throat. I just stood there, my mouth hanging open, and my stomach frozen in a hangman's knot. I could feel the DA's eyes boring into the back of my head.
Well, Rogue, why'd you do it?
Well, I didn't. I didn't kill her.
How do you explain the fact that she was killed here in your cabin?
She wasn't.
Now, look, Rogue, you better organize yourself, huh? You're supposed to be a smart investigator. Give me a gun.
I haven't got it on me. It's in that drawer there.
Yeah, we found that one. This girl was shot to death with a .25 automatic.
Any prints on it?
We're going to take yours for comparison.
Am I under suspicion for this murder?
At the moment, that's all you're under. I fondly hope you'll be under arrest for it the next half hour.
Oh. You know, Mills, in a homicide, you usually have to have a motive. Hey, what's that? Why are you waving those newspaper clippings in my face? What are they?
The motive. You were blackmailing Miss Cole, Rogue. We found these clippings in your briefcase.
What do you mean I was blackmailing her? I didn't even know her.
Now, look, Rogue, you're smarter than that. Here's a whole envelope full of clippings covering Miss Cole's trial for the murder of her first husband back in Passaic, New Jersey. Her name was Jane Sherman then, and she was released for lack of evidence. Remember the trial?
Of course I do. Poisoning. But what's that...
So you found out that this Jane Sherman, now known as Janice Cole, was all set to marry $1 million. And you've been blackmailing
her. Oh, I don't know anything about it, I tell you. I don't know how those clippings got into my briefcase. It must have been planted there when I was knocked out in Janice's bungalow.
It's a switch, Rogue. You were knocked out in her bungalow, eh? When?
Look, Mills, I know this whole thing's going to sound fantastic, but I want to tell you the whole story. I came up here on my vacation. I never saw Janice Cole or whatever her name was before tonight. Disbelief walked across the DA's face as I unspun the web of circumstances which tied me into this murder. As I listened to my own story, I knew I wouldn't believe it myself if I hadn't been there. I showed him the bump on my noggin. He just nodded. I talked on, and as I talked, I realized that I was acting like every murderer I'd ever questioned. I know my face was red, my eyes were shifting as I browbeat my brain into trying to think of some circumstance which would at least give me the benefit of a reasonable doubt. Finally, I stopped talking. He took my fingerprints, and we went to Janice Cole's bungalow. There, I got my first break.
All right, Rogue. Now, where was the body lying when you first saw it?
Right here. Right here. Come here. Look here. Look under this rug.
Uh-huh.
And blood on the floor where it seeped through the rug that's now in my bungalow. Do you see it?
Yeah. Blood, all right. Well, Rogue, that's the first thing that's made sense since we got together. I suppose there is an outside chance that somebody's trying to frame you.
Enough of a chance so a conviction would be hard to get, Mr. D.A. Look, you know me. I've got a little standing in my profession, a little substance. Give me 24 hours to get this thing hung around the right man's neck.
All right. If I don't have you locked up tonight, will you try and have the right man for me in the morning?
I'll have him. Now, tell me, who knows about the murder?
Well, the maid who went into your cottage to turn your bed down for the night, and the manager. Though I've told them both to keep quiet until I give them the go-ahead to talk.
Then none of the guests know about it yet, except the killer.
That's right. As far as I know.
Okay, Mills. Okay, now. You keep it that way until morning, and I'll come up with a guilty man for you.
Big talk.
I had been framed with loving care, like a sweetheart's picture. The DA shoved off to take care of the grisly details of moving the body from its temporary resting place on my bungalow floor, and I started shaking Janice Cole's bungalow down. There were particles of curved glass on the floor near where the body had been lying. I picked them up carefully and fitted the larger pieces together. They could only have been the crystal of a small, square wristwatch. It might be the clue to the killer. I went back to the main hotel building. The Saturday night party was still going strong. I rejoined the merry throng and looked for Frank. He seemed to me to be the logical suspect. He was from Janice Cole's hometown. He would have known about her trial for murder. I found him talking with Nancy in a corner, and he had on a large, round wristwatch. Nancy's watch was a dainty diamond and ruby affair, small and oblong.
Hello, Rogue. Nancy's been beating the bushes looking for you.
I have not. I just was mildly curious about where you disappeared to. I wanted to get rid of Frank and finish that dance with you.
Wow. This is as good a time as any. May I have the next one?
You may have all the rest of them if you like. Well, what's the matter, Richard? You have a pensive look.
Well, I was just trying to figure something out.
Oh?
I was supposed to have a dance with you at 9 o'clock. Where were you?
I was here. I got here just at 9, didn't I, Frank?
Don't try to prove anything by me, baby. I don't know. At 9 o'clock, I was having a drink with Clint Hayes in my bungalow.
Hmm. Well, there goes your alibi, Nancy. You weren't here.
Alibi? Why would I need an alibi? I was here, you weren't. I looked all over for you.
Oh, now, let's not argue about it. Let's have the next one, huh? I'll be right back.
Okay. No tricks now.
Hi, Clint.
What?
Oh, how come you're sitting this one out?
Oh, I, Hello, Rogue.
Well, I'm sorry I startled you.
I was just in a deep fog.
Hmm? Nancy come back yet?
No.
Nancy, I just changed her name there, if you don't mind. Yeah. I'm kind of worried about her.
Well, she's subject to headaches like this, poor kid.
Maybe you'd better run over and have a talk with her, huh?
Oh, I hate to bother her when she's feeling bad.
Look, Clint, just to settle a little argument. Yeah. Were you and Frank Pitts having a drink in his bungalow at 9 o'clock?
Oh, yes, matter of fact, we were. How'd you know that?
He just told me. Just a silly little argument.
I wish Janice would hurry back in time for the last dance, at least.
Clint Hayes had on a large, square wristwatch. And he and Frank had unbreakable alibis. Nancy had none. They were my three prime suspects, and it looked to me like Nancy was about to be elected. I was sitting there looking for Nancy and carrying on a pointless discussion on headaches, their cause and cure, with Clint, when Nancy came running over.
Come on, Clint. You too, Richard. We're all going down to the pool for a moonlight dip.
And I don't think I want to, Nancy.
Oh, come on. Just because Janice is feeling rocky tonight is no reason for you to be grumpy. Come on, Richard. Get your swim trunks and give the girls a treat.
Huh? All right. I'm in. Come on, Clint. A little dip or do you got it?
No, I don't think I...
Oh, come on, Clint.
Oh, might as well, Clint. Sounds like a good idea, doesn't it?
Well, Nancy, we got it all organized?
Yes. Richard and Clint are crazy about the idea, aren't you?
Oh, okay. I'll join you for a while.
Nice man, Clint. Hurry up now. See you at the pool.
Warning.
We'll continue our story in just a moment. First, a word to the ladies. Are you planning to have a new permanent to help you achieve that cool, crisp look this summer? If you are, here's a good point to remember. Shampooing with Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo will put your hair into grand condition for that cold wave or permanent. That's because Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo is such a thorough cleansing agent. It gets the hair immaculately clean and dandruff-free. Then, since it's completely soluble in water, it rinses out easily, leaving no dull, soapy film. Your hair is left radiant with no dirt, dandruff, or soapy film clinging to the hair strands to obstruct the work of the waving solution. Yes, permanent wave equipment manufacturers, such as the Realistic Permanent Wave Machine Company, E. Frederick Incorporated, and Duart Manufacturing Company, all agree that really clean hair is the first requisite to a successful permanent wave. For a soft, natural-looking wave, prepare your hair first with Fitch, F-I-T-C-H, Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Then use Fitch's regularly to keep your wave looking lovely. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
My performance in the pool that night made Nero's fiddle solo in the light of a burning room seem like the height of propriety. Here was Richard, the Fall Guy rogue, swimming and laughing with Frank, Clint, and Nancy, a bunch of murder suspects. A matter of hours before the law put a pair of stylishly plain bracelets on me and claimed me for its own if I hadn't solved the murder of Janice Cole. But there was method in my madness. That swim gave me the information I wanted. In fact, it gave me the murderer. I left before the swimming party broke up and went to one of the guest bungalows. An open window made the job of getting in as easy as falling in love. I found what I was looking for in a chest of drawers. Then I sat down and waited for my victim to come in and turn on the lights.
Rogue, what are you doing here?
Waiting to talk with you about a murder, Clint. Shut the door. Come in and sit down, Clint. I want to know all about what happened to Janice.
Janice? Something's happened to Janice?
Yes, Janice, and don't act so innocent. What do you know about her murder?
Well, I didn't kill her. What makes you think I killed her?
I didn't say you killed her, but I'm sure you know something about it. You know, you shouldn't get involved in murder, Clint. It's too complicated.
You're just talking, Rogue. You killed her. You were blackmailing her and you killed her.
Now, Clint. You weren't supposed to know anything about that. In fact, you couldn't have known anything about it unless you were the guy who framed me so nicely. I'm a little mad at you for that, you know. And I'm going to get a confession of that murder out of you some way or other. Now, do you feel like talking, or do I have to beat it out of you?
What makes you think I did it, Rogue?
Take off your wristwatch. Now, look at your wrist.
What?
You see that small square of white skin where you used to wear your small square wristwatch? That was the giveaway, Clint. You see this watch here, the one I found hidden under the shirts in that chest of drawers there? The crystal's broken, Clint. And it was broken in the struggle with Janice tonight just before you shot her. The broken glass was found on the floor of the cabin right where the body was before you moved it to mine. Now, do you feel any more like talking, Clint? Why did you kill her?
I didn't kill her. Hmm?
I got until morning for you to start talking, and I've got more socks than a 10-story laundry. Now, let me know when you want to start singing. You know what happened in that room, and you're going to tell me.
I didn't kill her. I didn't, I swear. I didn't, Rogue. I was there. Sure, I was there, but
if you didn't kill her, who did?
I can't tell you.
Come on, Clint. You're not smart enough to work out that frame on me. Who was in this with you?
I wouldn't answer that if I were you, Frank. Drop the gun, Rogue.
Oh, hello, Frank. Well, you're mixed up in this too, huh? Well, maybe we can arrange a double execution.
I didn't tell him anything, Frank. I didn't tell him a thing.
I know it. I was listening. Sit down, Rogue.
Sure. Glad to. You were the brains of this deal, weren't you, Frank?
It's pretty obvious that quivering mess over there wasn't, isn't it? It's a good thing I was keeping my eye on him tonight. You see, Rogue, when he opened the door and turned on the lights, I saw you sitting there, and that's why I came in the back way. I was afraid that Clint would talk too much.
You think of everything, don't you?
I try.
What are we going to do now, Frank? This Rogue, he knows I was there when Janice was murdered.
Knows you were there? Well, you might just as well know that you shot her then, huh? You did, you know.
Well, it was an accident.
Was it? I'll decide that.
Aren't you forgetting me, fellas?
Oh, no. No, we're not forgetting you, Mr. Rogue. It really doesn't make any difference who killed Janice as long as you disappear with all the evidence pointing to the fact that you did the job.
No, 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 Frank. I don't want any more killing.
Shut up. I'm handling this affair. I'm going to keep you out of the gas chamber, Clint, if you'll just shut up and do as I tell you. Take Rogue's necktie off and tie his hands. We're going to knock him off and throw him over a canyon where he'll never be found.
Well, you are? Well, I might as well take a crack at it.
Give me that gun.
Grab him, Clint. Grab him.
Well, hey, well, thanks, Clint. You were very handy with that chair. How come you hit him?
I couldn't let him kill you. I just couldn't.
All right. Take his necktie off and tie his hands with it. We're going to take him for a ride down to see the district attorney.
I killed her, Rogue. I killed Janice, but it was an accident. I swear it was an accident.
Well, you'll have a dandy chance to explain that to a jury, Clint. But now, come here. I've got something for you.
Oh!
That's for helping to frame me. Oh, brother, is that DA going to love me? Well, that was the end of the case. Frank had been blackmailing Janice Cole ever since her engagement to wealthy playboy Clint Hayes was announced. And that night, when Frank went to Janice's cabin, Clint followed him. When Clint arrived on the scene, jealousy took over. Frank drew a gun, and Clint jumped him. In the struggle which followed, Janice was shot while the gun was in Clint's hand. Helpful Frank, the cues scared Clint of the murder and talked him into framing me. Frank saw lovely visions of many happy years of blackmailing a millionaire. That broken watch crystal was the only thing that kept the frame from working. So I get my brains beat out. I put the arm on a killer and blackmailer. My vacation is broken up like a drop light bulb, and I didn't make a dime. Oh, well. Let's face it, if I hadn't been so clever, I'd be doing a life sentence instead of Clinton Frank.
I wouldn't like that.
No. I've heard that stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage. But it's hard to illustrate the truth of that old saw to a guy who's behind the former looking through the latter. You know what I mean? This is Dick Mushmouth Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed. Be with us again next Sunday, will you? We have a story for you about a doctor, a dentist, and a miserly old lady who comes up dead. We call it, Where There's a Will, There's a Murder. Thanks for listening, and now here's James with a hair Doyle.
Listen again next week at this same time to hear Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. And by the way, Dick will soon be seen in his newest Columbia picture, Johnny O'Clock.
Laugh a while, let a song be your style. Use Fitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair. Use Fitch shampoo.
After and between Fitch shampoos, you can keep your hair shining and manageable by using a few drops of Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic every day. Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic is not sticky or greasy, yet it gives your hair that well-groomed look.
Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air. This is Sergeant Dan Meredith of Unit 99 at Headquarters, Police Department, City of Sacramento, California. My detail is to ride in Unit 99, our tape recorder-equipped radio car, and to respond whenever the dispatcher transmits a signal to one of our other units on duty somewhere in the city. Now, to tell you more about Unit 99, here is our chief, James V. Hicks, Sacramento Police.
We have provided Unit 99 of the Sacramento Police Department the tape recorder it carries and the officer in charge, Sergeant Meredith, so that you, who depend on your police for protection, can hear them in action, on duty. And what you hear on this radio program is real. No question about it. The suspects are real. The victims are real. Bear this in mind as you hear these cases. Now to Unit 99 and Sergeant Dan Meredith on duty.
We're covering in with Unit 5 on a family disturbance complaint out on 3rd Avenue.
As a rule, these calls don't amount to much, but you never can tell. So we'll take a look at it.
Unit, sir, and his lady outside. Let's check.
These people live next door. They both are gone. He's gone. He's left in the car. He left earlier in the evening, I guess. But she's been screaming her head off for him over there, and I heard her fall. Is she laying in the kitchen now?
Yes, ma'am. She's in the kitchenette on the floor, evidently.
Well, you guys go ahead and get in.
They're moaning in there and crying.
Let's go check with her. Is your partner in there, Sutton?
He went around the back to see if the back door is open. No, we tried the front door. No one answered. Perhaps the woman's home by herself.
Get through this way.
Yeah, and we're going to have to go in through the window.
Yeah, and she sounds like she's having trouble right now. Can you open this gate here?
Yeah,
there's an awful lot of thumping going on inside there. Sounds like she's hysterical, crying. She won't let you in?
No, she doesn't respond, Dan.
Hello in there? You're pretty serious. Lights are on.
Yeah, I can see her look like a leg or something there through the window in the kitchen there, in the kitchenette.
In the kitchen here next to the porch?
Door to the right. In the middle of the house.
What? You got the window open? Open the back door, too, and when you get in. Yeah. How's it look, Schutz?
Well, the bedroom's a shambles, Dan.
You smell gas in here? Where is she?
Right here.
Oh, yes.
Lady, we're police officers. What's the matter here? What happened here tonight? Can you talk? Can you tell us what happened?
Yes.
What seems to be the trouble? We're here to help you, ma'am. You want to tell us now what happened?
Yes.
Well, what is it? Have you been drinking?
No, my husband's beating me.
Where is your husband now? I'll look around and see if I don't think there's anyone else in the house.
No, I don't believe there is. She's all bruised up. Her arm's sure of that. Have you been fighting tonight with your husband?
Yes.
Well, how many of these she took?
Here's
an empty package of sleeping tablets, Dan.
Have you been taking any tablets tonight, sleeping tablets?
I've taken some.
I can't understand you. Did you take quite a few tonight? Have you?
No.
Where's your husband? Has he been here this evening at all? How long ago did he leave?
Let's get back to these tablets, these pills. This container is empty. Have you taken any of these tonight?
No.
What are they for?
Nemitol.
What was that?
Nemitol.
I see. Well, Sutton, I don't think we can get much out of her. She's told us about these pills. She evidently hasn't taken any tonight, or she would tell us. Well, here she is now. She's trying to get up. Here, let us help you there. Let's take her into bed there. She's shaking quite a bit. That's a girl. Right through here. Right into your bedroom now. That's it.
Watch your step, Brooks. You just lay down to the left.
How about these other pills here? I see there's some others on the
same side there.
The bureau here. We'll have to find somebody to take care of her. She's in no condition to take care of herself. We better check with the next door neighbor. Maybe she might have some idea.
I'll go and check now. Sorry, I need to check with the neighbor and see if she can give us some idea.
Okay, Sutton, we'll wait for you.
I won't take too many. Please, please me. I won't take too many.
There was little the officers could do in this case, other than to make sure she had not taken an overdose of a sedative
and enlist the services of a neighbor in caring for her. Although this woman had been beaten by her husband, she refused to sign a complaint and no official action was taken.
Unit 3. Unit 3, 614X X-ray. Check on juveniles throwing knives at a building. Check 3, KMA-907.
Juveniles throwing knives at buildings. 600 block on X Street, that's near that housing project. Let's check it out with them. There's some young fellow out in the yard here. Let's have a talk with him. Hey, come here, will you? Hurry up. Here, what you got in your hand there? Is this one of them?
That's one of them.
Would you just take a run for when we came up?
Maybe it was with that car there.
Huh? How old are you?
17.
No, that's not one of them. Where's the other boy at?
He went home.
Well, what are you doing around here?
I live right over here.
Well, where's the knife that you've been throwing against these walls?
The other guy took my blade home.
Huh?
The other guy took it home.
Took it home? Well, how long have you been doing this? This has been going on for quite some time.
I just got the dagger a few days ago.
A dagger?
Yeah.
What kind of a dagger?
Not so long.
About a 10-inch dagger?
I don't know how long it was.
Well, you go get that dagger. Jerry's checking the door to the warehouse there, the Quonset Hut. Is it Jimmy, Jerry?
Jerry didn't mind.
What's that? How about that paneling there in the door? Is that knocked out?
No.
This kid, this here he comes now. I think this is he. Yeah, he's going over after the knife that they were using here.
Oh. Where'd they throw it on the... left?
Well, the other kid left.
Oh.
So we'll find out who the other boy is. It's quite a dagger. He said it's large, long. There, he got it. He has it in his hand now.
Here it is. I just met him in a park, throwing knives together and no one killed me. Oh, about 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
That's a deer knife. It's about a 6 or 7 inch blade. Where did you get this? Pardon me. Where did you get this?
Oh, I borrowed from some guy. He found it in the river.
You found it in the river?
That's what he said. Found it by the river. I borrowed it from him. I didn't get back.
Well, where did you just get it?
Huh? Oh, I had it for a couple of days.
Where did you just come from?
Well, I just came. I was running around looking for the guy. I don't know if he went that way.
Now, come on, tell us the truth. Who was the boy that you went and got this knife from just now? You told me you were going over to get it from him. Now, where is he?
I don't know his name.
Where does he live?
I told you, I just met him in a park.
You went over to his place right now to get the knife.
I ran after him. I caught him down that runway right there, that big long runway. I told him he had to give me the knife back. He gave it to me and he kept going walking.
You ever been in juvenile hall before?
Yeah.
For what?
First time. Burglary and strong arm and car theft.
Three times.
Well, King, what are you going to do?
Well, I think we'll turn him over to his parents and have his parents bring him down to see Captain Gessner Monday morning.
That wasn't an innocent toy this boy was playing with, and it wasn't exactly a childish pastime. He was released to the custody of his parents, pending further action by the juvenile division. The parents agreed to pay for the damage to the building.
Unit 99.
99, go ahead.
924, second floor, 99.
Second floor, roger.
1099, KMA-907.
The detective division's been working on a series of burglaries, and Bill Oakes told me they might pick up somebody tonight. That call for us to come in might be it.
Going into the detective division. Fox and Oakes, I was just checking with the radio sergeant down there, and he informs me that you might have something. What's it about? Oh, we got
We got some information on four or five fellows that's been pulling a lot of these burglaries around here, mainly the cigarettes and meat and candy burgers, we've been calling them. And we have a spot maintained right now by two of the other officers, Detective Rellis and Rogers. They're out on the spot now, waiting for one of the fellows to come back. We have one of the fellows upstairs we brought in just a few minutes ago, and we're going out now over to Bryant to see if we can pick up the third man.
You have a lead on the third man?
We have a lead on the third man. We have an address over in Bryant we're going to check. You want to take a ride with us over there?
All right, yeah.
Should we hit Q Street or we go back over to Bright?
Well, he lived in Bright with the party for a while. Maybe we better take a run over there and see if we can make a contact there. And if he's there,
17.
Grab him. If he's not, we'll go back over to the Q Street address.
Is this the spot? Okay.
The man that we're in search of was living here at this 520 address, and I see there's no lights in that particular house, but we're going next door and inquire whether or not she still lives there.
Unit 24.
Those people we can see from here.
Yes.
Okay, I'll wait for you.
24 immediately.
Check. I wonder what that is.
They just received a transmission to get in touch with their office immediately. It's very dark in this area. It's an old district on the other side of the river. They've gone into the yard and into the next house. They're talking with a couple of people there now. Back to the car. What'd you learn, Fox?
I haven't seen him since Tuesday. He was over here Tuesday.
You got a 914, Bill.
Or it possibly a call from the officers on spot over there at the place in town. Very likely they've got the one man we're looking for, and man that we're looking for here may possibly have gone over there as we had expected.
There's a public telephone right off the highway. You're going to make contact with the office now.
Do you have the price of a phone call? Well, this is expensive, this trip.
Let's see if I have some.
Here's one, Doc.
I outshuffled you that time.
I've got two of them, by golly.
You got another lead on this fella at a different location?
Yes, in the same in Bright here, and so we're going over there and surround the building.
Folks, do you know this fella from before?
Yes, Sergeant. He's an old-timer around here. He's a good burglar. He's been in the penitentiary on several occasions. He's just out about a month. A short time ago, he contacted Fox and myself and seemed to be serious about we trying to get him a job, which we attempted to do, and we lost track of him, and we haven't seen him until the last week. We've gotten a few rumbles on he and several other fellows responsible for some of our burglaries. So we know him well. He's an old con. He's con-wise, and he's a pretty shrewd operator.
Oh, what were those boots and shoes that you brought into the detective bureau tonight?
They're out of an out-of-town burglary. We're not just too sure what community. It's a small rural community. When we arrived there, Don, we looked the place over, and if it's possible, I'll sneak into the backyard and cover the back door in case he tries to make the back on us and you take the front.
Is this fellow dangerous or presumed to be?
Everyone is presumed to be dangerous when you pick them up. we treat him as such, Sergeant, because he is a loser. He's on life parole now, and he certainly doesn't want to go back.
We've arrived at the location. We're going to park a distance away from the place and walk over to it. It's very dark out here. No street lights. A lot of trees. Houses are surrounded by trees. There's somebody coming out of that house now. I better get in out of the way. Folks is going around the back. Fox is covering the front. Somebody out in front of the place now. He's talking to someone now. We'll go in the yard.
You seen a fellow walking around here tonight?
No, I haven't seen nobody around here tonight.
There's a tall hedge alongside of the house. Oaks and Fox now are shining their flashlights on the other side of the hedge, away from the house. They believe that he might have gotten over and gotten away. There's a good indication that he's been here. There's Oaks and Fox now going.
Come on out.
There's an animal. They're still searching around this area. It's large lot, almost a field, trees, bushes. Did you check over in the corner over there, Don?
We're going to leave this area now, Sergeant. The man was at the house. He apparently saw us drive up and he took off.
You going to come back later on this evening?
Yes. Uh-huh.
We just returned to the area. We're now on the opposite side of the block where we can see the house through the field. Fox and Oaks are going back around front, cover the house, front and rear.
Oh, turn the lights off. And we'll walk down and I'll go immediately into the back area and cover that, huh?
We're traveling with our lights off. Detective Oaks has the portable spotlight. He, as he said, is going to cover the back area while Fox and myself will take the front. We're parking some distance from the house and we'll walk up to it.
Don't slam the door.
Get around the back. We'll stand on the side in case he comes out through a window. I think Oaks is inside now, John. Let's go in.
Come on,
get out from under that bed. He's underneath the cot.
Keep your hands down.
You pull him out from underneath the bed.
I think you're trying to pull. I don't
mind if you're running. That's it. Put the cuffs on.
You're running from the wrong people this time.
What are you running for? If you got nothing to worry about.
We tried to treat you like a kid and all the way through.
All right.
What's this guy here? Who?
Who's he? This guy here. You were here this evening when we came by the first time, weren't you?
No, sir.
Don't give us that stuff. We know you were here.
But I left.
I know. You left when we were here. Which way did you leave the house?
There wasn't an house. It was down the street there.
Were you in this house when we was over here before?
No, sir.
Huh?
No, sir.
That's a good thing. Otherwise, he'd go to jail, too, for covering you up.
No, sir. We wasn't here.
See how you get everybody involved?
I wasn't here then.
No, because he was. You could have come. You could have.
Where were you at when we were over here before?
I was down the next street, about two blocks.
You sure you weren't here?
Yes, sir.
Right. And ask my kids. They know.
Who
wasn't here?
You see, you were down there a couple of blocks. Where'd you go?
The levee down there.
You went down to the levee. How long did you stay down there?
Oh, about an hour.
Well, it's a good thing that he clears these people here.
No, he wasn't here.
I wasn't here.
Okay, all right, that's all we want to know.
I'm going to take the names of these people, Donald.
Yeah, okay, I'll take this.
All right.
For a police detective, I sometimes believe that patience is a major qualification. The action you covered tonight actually extended over a period of several hours. The burglar suspect was released to a neighboring county for prosecution there. And if you are ever inclined to believe that police work is not hazardous, remember the words of Detective Oakes. We consider them all dangerous.
This is Unit 99. These on-the-scene tape recordings were provided by the Sacramento Police Department and were made on duty by Sergeant Dan Meredith. In Unit 99, your host is Chief James V. Hicks of the Sacramento Police Department. Be with us when once again you will hear...
KMA 907, Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909...
Unit 99 has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's it for Case Closed this week. You can find more from Rogues Gallery and Unit 99 at relicradio.com alongside past episodes of Case Closed and all the other shows. You can also find our Shoutcast stream there, and if you'd like to help support that, this, and everything else Relic Radio, click on that donate button. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts. It's how this is all made possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have been able to help out, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.